On July 3, 1776, John Adams wrote that the signing of the Declaration of Independence should be celebrated every year with pomp and parade and shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast about the great books and the liberal arts. Here in Lander, Wyoming, on the 4th of July, we celebrate in a way that would make John Adams proud. But come September 17th at Wyoming Catholic College, we also celebrate. It's Constitution Day, the day our Constitution was signed and then sent to the states for ratification. And rather than celebrating with guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations, we quietly reflect. Dr. Pavlos Papadopoulos, assistant professor of humanities, who is new to the college this year, lectured on Constitution Day on the topic Popular Government and Our Constitution. Dr. Papadopoulos is our guest this week on the After Dinner Scholar. Dr. Papadopoulos, what is popular government and how did the Constitution establish popular government?
Popular government, as Publius uses the term, is a government of the people, government that is based on the authority of the people. Publius speaks of the Constitution as establishing a wholly popular form of government, and by that he means all authority in the federal Constitution is derived from the people, is checked by the people, and is in accord with the consent of the people. A few examples of how the Constitution establishes popular government. The most obvious is the House of Representatives. Our congressmen are directly elected by the people, but this applies even to offices like Supreme Court justices, who are indirectly appointed by the people through the Senate and the presidency, and who serve not at the pleasure of the people, they aren't elected and reelected, but may be removed from office if they misbehave. And therefore serve contingent on good behavior.
You said in your lecture, the Constitution establishes a wholly popular and wholly Republican and wholly not Democratic government. What does that mean, beginning with the difference between popular, Republican, and Democratic?
Sure. In the Federalist Papers, Publius says that Republican and Democratic forms of government are each subcategories of a popular form of government. A democratic form of government is what we would call a direct democracy, where the people as a body together make decisions of state, whereas a republic delegates the authority from the people to their representatives. Publius points out that the Constitution establishes a wholly popular, because wholly Republican, form of government, but entirely not democratic form of government, because the people as people never make any decision in the federal government. We, as the people divided into states and so on, we elect officials, but in every instance, it's a Republican exercise of our power. We are always choosing someone who we trust to make the decisions and the policy decisions in government.
As opposed to the example of the New England town meeting, where everybody gets a voice.
The New England town meeting, ancient Athens, elements of ancient Rome, all these examples that the founders pointed to and were very well aware of and saw as exercising good influence on a small scale, such as in the New England township that Tocqueville discusses, but realizing that when this is invested with the powers of state that you have in a democracy like ancient Athens, it can lead to some very terrible consequences.
You noted that the self-evident truths to which the Declaration refers suggests a certain form of government, but doesn't require a certain form of government. What does it suggest and what does it not require?
The self-evident truths, we take for granted that the self-evident truths lead to the democracy we have, lead to the republic that we have as established by the Constitution. But what they actually require is a recognition of popular sovereignty over form of government. If we read on in the Declaration after the self-evident truths are articulated, we learn that according to the Declaration, whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, the protection of natural rights, it's the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation upon such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And I emphasize the end of that because the declaration leaves it up to the people, to the decision of the people, to the prudence or the imprudence, the wisdom or the folly of the people, to decide what form of government will best secure their rights in a given situation. The founders believed that a popular form of government, a republican form of government, would be the best form of government at the state and federal level, but the declaration itself allows for situations in which a popular government would not be the most prudent to institute.
Mm-hmm. So if an emergency came up and some other form of government needed to be put into place to protect popular sovereignty, to protect the people could decide to do that.
They could, and that would not be legitimate according to the Constitution. It would be legitimate according to the principles of the mm-hmm. Declaration, in which the people are the ultimate source of authority on deciding when to support a government or when to alter or abolish it, and what form of government to institute, whether that form be popular or not popular.
And so the Constitution can be amended.
The Constitution can be amended. Yeah. And the Constitution can be amended, interestingly, in a Republican fashion. Even the amendments to the Constitution do not happen simply through a popular vote, through a plebiscite. It is always mediated through the state legislatures and through Congress.
Now, what experiences did the framers of the Constitution draw on when they established the form of government that we have?
Yeah, Publius says that in the Federalist Papers, Publius says experience is the least fallible guide of human opinions. And the experiences they drew on were of two kinds. One, the direct experience of self-government. Some of the colonies had been governing themselves for almost 150 years by the time the revolution broke out. And so they had a great deal of experience in running their own internal affairs and prosecuting wars, even alongside the British, and governing themselves generally. But they also appealed to and greatly relied on a kind of indirect experience of history. And so the founders were very deeply read and widely read in history, both ancient and modern. Throughout the Federalist Papers, you'll find them appealing to the history of ancient Greece, of ancient Rome, of Renaissance Italy, of modern England and France, among others. And they constantly appeal to experience and to history as a resource for understanding what will actually happen. They understood that it's not sufficient to discuss what the right principles of government are, what the right ends of government are in the abstract, but that what one actually has to understand what will happen when one puts certain principles into action and when individuals are there on the ground making decisions. And so they drew from history this wealth of knowledge about what actually happens in government. That knowledge of history enabled the prudence which they exercised, because prudence itself relies on experience. And so you need the direct lived experience of being a member of a political society, but you can aid the development, the cultivation of prudence by reading history. And so that knowledge of history was essential to the founders making prudential decisions in writing the Constitution the way they did.
Can you give us an example of what they read and how specifically they incorporated that?
Sure. There are many references throughout the Federalist Papers to Plutarch's Lives, to Thucydides' history, to a whole range of histories of ancient Rome, to Livy, to Tacitus, and also to modern histories of Italy and France. And we here at Wyoming Catholic, one of the very exciting things about teaching here is that our freshmen and sophomores right now are reading those ancient histories and are gaining the same kind of experience, indirect experience, as the founders had, and seeing what Publius calls the histories of the petty republics of Greece conflict with each other and come into ruin. And they were able to draw on those histories again to construct a form of government that would be more stable and less prone to civil strife.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think of Athens sentencing Socrates to death. Mm-hmm. And the description is less of an assembly than of a barely controlled mob, rather than having representatives.
Right, right. And rather than having an independent judiciary, right, which is one of the key elements of political science that the Federalist Papers argues for, to try to remove that mob element from a power as great as executing citizens.
You ended your lecture talking about the connection between politics and the virtue of prudence. Tell us about that, and how do we develop prudence in our day?
So prudence, the classic definition of prudence from Aristotle, is another way of rendering it is practical wisdom, and it's the intellectual virtue that's relevant to moral virtues, that is able to recognize, the prudent man is able to recognize what the right, noble, moral thing to do is in any given situation, and then to do it. How do we become prudent? It requires not only a love of nobility and a love of the good, but also maturity and experience. And so Aristotle would recognize that one has to be a mature adult in order to fully possess the virtue of prudence. We are fortunate, though, in possessing such a great wealth of history going back to the ancient times, that we can aid our personal experience by reading history. And I would add also by reading literature. Literature is a great example of seeing seeing moral situations and seeing how different individuals react in different situations. And so we gain a kind of indirect experience by reading imaginative works of literature and also by reading political histories. This gives us a kind of practice in making the right decision. We see the consequences of certain decisions made by characters whom we can read about. And we gain a wider experience than we could ever gain in our own individual lives by the reading of literature and history. And so the founders understand this kind of education in literature and history as aiding our political deliberations, as aiding our individual possession of the virtue of prudence. I don't think they'd reduce it to a political use, but they would see this as a great benefit, a great boon of studying literature and history.
People of my age who kind of grew up when communism was around and was alive and active all over Europe and elsewhere, I'm aghast that there are people who are all of a sudden saying, well, no, socialism is just a great idea. This is all a great idea. Mm-hmm. And it's as if they don't know.
Mm-hmm. They don't. And hope... Hopefully, we learn about these things through literature, right? And through something indirect, that we don't have to go through suffering through this kind of tyranny ourselves to understand what is at stake in it. But if we have lost the direct experience of these kinds of threats, then we can at least try to gain them by giving ourselves a better and a wider education in the possibilities of tyranny and of good political rule.
Mm-hmm. Which is precisely what the founders did.
Precisely, yes.
Dr. Papadopoulos ended his lecture with these words, quote, "One of the ways in which we the people must exercise our prudence is in electing our leaders. After all, in a republic, we elevate individuals to high offices in the hope that they will possess the exemplary prudence of statesmen." Close quote. With just 5 weeks of campaigning remaining before the midterm elections on November 6th, we would all do well to reflect on those words, to reread the Constitution, and to pray for prudence for ourselves and our fellow citizens. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.